This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates apply. Like what you hear, hate what you hear, we want to hear it via text. And of course, our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news, audio, everything from training camp, that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Sam Werner. Sam is the Penguins beat writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Sam, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, absolutely. Glad to join you guys.
And we appreciate your time, Sam. Start of training camp for all 31 NHL teams, and of course in Pittsburgh it was the shortest of all the training camps, or the shortest of all the off seasons, rather, as the Penguins won the Stanley Cup for the second consecutive year. They spent the summer, you know, parading it around. Everybody gets their day with the cup. How do the Penguins now, you know, in their quest for three in a row, how do they prevent sort of, not apathy, because that's not the right word, but, you know, given the amount of hockey that they've played over the last couple seasons, how, and the short off season that they have, how do they sort of prevent a little bit of a lethargic attitude to start the year?
Yeah, you know, we've talked to a lot of players about that over the past couple of days, and I think the sort of general consensus is, you know, from a short off-season perspective, you know, they're tired. They will be tired. The NHL season is long. But in a lot of ways, I think the task is maybe a little bit more manageable this year because, you know, they had a short summer last year, too, coming off the Stanley Cup, and everyone was telling them, no one goes back-to-back. You're not going to win it this year. And they were able to go through and sort of battle through the season and do it. So they know what it's like to win a Stanley Cup after having a short off-season. So I think that experience will be good for them to draw from. And from a motivation perspective, I was actually talking with Ian Cole about this yesterday, and he sort of said, you know, they do such a good job of basically hitting a reset button at the beginning of each season where, yes, they have a lot of guys back. The core of the team is obviously the same as the guys that have won the last two cups. But there are a lot of new guys, and this is a new team. And so I think in that regard, it's sort of that's where you draw the motivation from, the fact that even though – you won the last 2 years, this is a new team, a new year, and you know, obviously every team starts the year wanting to win the Stanley Cup. So the motivation is there in that regard, I think.
Sam, why doesn't Phil Kessel want to talk about his hair?
I don't know, to be honest with you. If you know, that's the story of the offseason for me, the fact that Phil was able to grow that luxurious mane that he's got on his head right now. I almost worry that bringing too much attention to it is gonna make him want to cut it and sort of end the story. So maybe we could be quiet about it. He'll just let it grow throughout the season, and we'll see what we get next spring.
Okay, Sam, so now I have a serious question for you here. You wrote about this yesterday. It's no secret that the Pens are still seeking a third-line center. Do you think Jim Rutherford is close to getting that third-line center, and do you think it could potentially be Riley Sheahan from Detroit?
Yeah, I get the sense that they're close. You know, that could mean a lot of different things. But I think that they're fine opening the season with the roster as is, but you talk to anyone around the organization, and even Rutherford himself would say, like, opening the season with the roster as is would be a short-term solution. They need someone at some point, and so whether it happens before the season starts or a couple of days or weeks in, you know, I think that's sort of the time frame you're looking at. And yeah, I think Sheahan is the option that sort of makes the most sense from the Penguins and sort of fits what they're looking for best. You know, he's a guy that would be a little bit of a reclamation project. Obviously his season last year was, you know, I hesitate to use the word disaster, but that's sort of what it was. He fits the price range Rutherford's looking into around $2 million. And, you know, he's got a good pedigree. Like, he's a talented guy and he can come in and sort of, he can play offensively, and then if they want to put Kessel down there, he can do that. And he's, you know, killed penalties, so they could put him there too. I think that's the name that makes the most sense. You know, whether or not they can sort of consummate a deal at some point over the next few days or weeks, we'll see. But that's certainly the one name that I would, you know, put at the forefront of their third line center search right now.
Sam, 58 players, I believe, took to the ice for the Penguins to start training camp, but all eyes were most likely on Chris Letang. How did he look on his return to the ice?
He looked good. He looked like Chris Letang, honestly. At the end of practice, they do their conditioning skates, and it was him and a couple of young guys, and he was basically an entire zone ahead of them during these skates. When he wants to turn it on, he can turn it on. So he's been skating since early July. So he's been on the ice. He's been able to sort of work out and stay in shape and that sort of thing. So, all indications are he'll be ready to go for opening night. And he looks like Chris Letang at this point, which is the best thing you can say from the Penguins' perspective.
Sam Werner is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Penguins beat writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Sam, this is the first time we really think about the Pittsburgh Penguins organization without Marc-Andre Fleury. And it's been so long. He's been such a fixture on the team. What's it like stepping into the dressing room? What's training camp been like without the presence of Marc-Andre Fleury?
Yeah, it's a little strange, and especially because the way their locker room's set up, you're used to Fleury's basically the first stall you see when you walk in, and it's been that way, honestly, since they built this building that I'm standing in right now, their practice facility, which opened a few years ago. So it's a little strange, and especially because a guy like Fleury was such a big personality off the ice, too. He was always the jokester, the guy that sort of lightened the mood a little bit. And so it's not just sort of a player you're missing, but a personality, too. So, some guys admitted it's a little weird not having him around, but it's sort of, if there's ever a time to sort of turn the page and move forward, this is it, when you sort of got all eyes ahead on the next season. So I think yesterday was probably the day to sort of, think about it, have your memories about Fleury, and then for the players, now it's sort of turn your attention towards this season and, let him sort of move on in Vegas.
Sam, with some of the veteran defensemen gone, Ron Hainsey, Trevor Daley, Mark Streit, is there going to be a little bit more pressure on Ollie Matta this year to elevate his game? Because at times he struggled, not so much in the playoffs, but during the regular season.
Yeah, I think Ollie Matta will be an interesting guy to watch this year because he had a pretty strong postseason. And, he's definitely shown flashes of being that guy, the guy that earned the $4 million a year contract he got a few years back. But what I'm interested to see is that when he's been at his most successful over the last couple of years, it's been when he's had a really sort of steady, solid defense partner next to him. And, 2 years ago it was Ben Lovejoy. Last year it was Trevor Daley for most of the season. And so I'm interested if he can sort of put it together where they can sort of move him around a little bit. And I think for the Penguins' sake, the best case scenario for the blue line would be if he could end up playing with Matt Hunwick. The new addition they brought in this offseason, because that would allow Cole and Schultz to stay together and Letang and Dumoulin as the top pair. But right now, if you're asking me, I think a Mata-Hunwick pairing would make me a little bit nervous from a defensive perspective. So I think it'll be interesting to see if Ollie can take that step forward and rather than be sort of a nice player and a good complementary piece on a pairing, if he can sort of be that solid two-way defenseman that they've always sort of had expectations of. If he can, that goes a long way towards shoring up their defensive depth and sort of how they can rotate their defensemen through the lineup.
So what are expectations on Carl Hagelin this season?
Certainly a bounce back year. I think it's sort of funny. We talked to him the other day, and he said, he doesn't have bad memories of last season. He scored the empty net goal to clinch the Stanley Cup final, so that sort of goes to the front of your head, but obviously the offensive totals weren't where he wanted them to be. And I think especially when you look at the Penguins and sort of the way their team's made up, for a guy making $4 million a year, you need more offensive production out of him than what they got last year. So I think, a step forward, the thing with him is, he's going to have that speed and he's going to be, a part of their penalty kill. He's going to play an important role, but I think if he can get, back into the sort of the 15 goal range, that would be, I think, a successful bounce back year. And obviously, stay healthy once again. He missed 20 games towards the end of last year was a broken foot. So, getting back on the ice for the entire season would obviously be a good thing too.
Sam, I thought one of the more underrated signings of the year was bringing in Antti Niemi on a one-year contract. And I realized the last couple of years he struggled with the Dallas Stars. But let's be honest here, the Dallas Stars struggled as a team defensively over the last couple of years. How much is expected of Antti Niemi? Matt Murray's obviously going to get the majority of the starts. But are we talking about, 10 games, 20 games? What do they expect out of Antti Niemi this year playing that backup role?
I think you're probably looking at somewhere more in the 20 plus game range from Niemi this year. And you know, Jim Rutherford will tell anyone who asks him, and even if you don't, he'll tell you he thinks Antti Niemi is going to have a big bounce back year this year. I think, you know, you say it's one of the most underrated signings. I think Jim Rutherford would agree with you, and he is that's probably the signing that he gets most excited about when he talks about it. I think Niemi's going to have to carry a fairly sizable load for them this year because while Matt Murray will probably, obviously take a step forward, play some more games this year, he has had issues with durability in the past. You know, he's gotten hurt a couple of times, obviously, at the beginning and end of last season. So, I'd be surprised if he made it through an entire 82-game season healthy. And even if he does, you know, they want to rest him and make sure he's completely healthy and ready to go for the postseason because, you know, for a team like the Penguins, that's really what matters is making sure that everyone's healthy and ready to go in April. So I think that'll sort of be Niemi's primary objective and what he's tasked with here is, you know, filling in on the back-to-backs, but also just taking some loads off Matt Murray when they have stretches. So, yeah, I'd say somewhere between 20-plus games is what you're looking at from Niemi. And, you know, from his perspective, if he can have a strong year, maybe he can parlay that into a bigger contract elsewhere next season.
Sam, we'll let you go on this last question. He certainly found a home in Pittsburgh. That's Justin Schultz, since he was anointed as the second coming of Paul Coffey and Bobby Orr in Edmonton. He got paid this offseason the 3-year, $16.5 million contract from a guy who had no expectations on him when he joined the Penguins to a guy now getting paid like a top-flight NHL defenseman. How has that changed for Justin Schultz? How does the pressure change, and how have you noticed him respond to that change so far in this early stages of training camp?
Yeah. Well, I remember talking to him last at their locker cleanout day last year, and I think someone asked him, you know, because last season he took a 1-year deal at probably less than he could have gotten elsewhere, basically, you know, with the hopes of parlaying it into a bigger money deal with another good season in Pittsburgh. And someone said, well, you bet on yourself, and it sort of worked out. And he said, I mean, it couldn't have worked out any better. I think he recognizes that there's a little more pressure on him now to play like the $5 million defenseman that he is. But I think he's gotten so comfortable in this system and, the Penguins locker room that there's really no reason to think he won't be able to continue what he did last season this year. I mean, it's been sort of cool to see because he's always been, you know, a guy that's good to talk to, you know, good with us in the media. And so you like seeing guys like that get rewarded with success. But, he recognizes that now, you know, he's no longer the sort of reclamation project. He is an established number one-ish defenseman. And so he's going to have to produce like it this year.
Sam Werner covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Sam, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll do it again real soon.
Sam, make sure you ask Phil about his hair in that scrum today.
Oh, believe me, we talked to Phil yesterday. I don't think we're going to get him again for a while. Maybe mid-season we'll get to ask him about his hair.
Thank you, Sam.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys.
When we come back, we shift our focus to the city of Calgary. It's a showdown between the Flames and the city over a new arena. Talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
And here's Gaudreau one more time down the wing. Johnny Gaudreau. Turning, waiting for support, plays it back off the benches. Dougie Hamilton, pad saved by Condon. They score on the rebound. Sean Monahan able to put it home. And the Flames take a 2-0 lead with 2:52 to go in the period.
Johnny Gaudreau, Dougie Hamilton, Sam Bennett, the newest members of your Seattle NHL team. No. Joking about that, but things in Calgary getting a little bit ugly, getting a little bit heated with regard to the new arena. We discussed that during this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, official golf course of Illegal Curve Hockey. Bell Acres offers an 18-hole championship golf course that golfers of all levels can enjoy. For more information or to book a tee time today, visit bellacres.com. I'm going to suggest only the real true diehards are out hitting the links on a day like today. Not really golf weather, but the forecast is going to call for at least another day, another couple days, another few days of some golf weather. So send us a text message right now to 129090. Text tee time. to $12.90, and I don't mean tea like the drinking tea. I mean tea like the golf tea. Tea time to $12.90. We're going to give away a couple passes to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. So one more time, tea time to $12.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. We'll get you out to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club before the golf season.
You've always been a teetotaler, Drew.
Again, not so much. But I do carry a lot of golf tees in my bag, so if you want to say that I have a total amount of golf tees, then yes. But no, I don't.
No.
That wasn't where you were going
no.
with that?
That's a reach.
Yeah, sorry. I was struggling there with that one. Calgary, things getting ugly, things getting heated with the Calgary Flames. They're fighting the Flames ownership. They've had enough with the city of Calgary.
Before you get into this, Drew.
Okay. I know. No.
I mean, this bugs me because the Calgary Flames are not going anywhere.
No, of course not.
And they're getting their new arena eventually.
Of course
not. I mean, does anybody really think that they're not getting a new arena?
No, eventually they will come to an agreement with the city of Calgary and the...
Yes.
I'm hopeful for the taxpayers in Calgary that the Flames billionaire owners end up paying for the majority of the arena.
Not a third.
The
probably
majority.
A half.
Yeah, maybe even two-thirds, and the city will throw in some sort of tax breaks and everything else. But I always enjoy when NHL owners throw a hissy fit, because that's what they did.
Yep.
And then they fly in Gary Bettman to make the threats, because the owners themselves never want to be the ones making the threat.
Why did Gary Bettman need to be flown in?
Because he had to make the threat. The owners don't want to be the ones making the threat. The owners don't want to be the ones threatening to move the team, but Gary Bettman will come in, and sure, he's really independent in this one. He comes in and says, oh, well, if we don't get a new arena here soon, we're going to be moving to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. They have a great hockey climate in Tuscaloosa. They are desperate for a team.
With all due respect to Gary Bettman, Drew, he did not need to be there at all.
They called him in like in an emergency. He wasn't like scheduled to be there. They flew
didn't
him
need
in
to be there.
For the meeting.
Couple of things. First of all, Drew, your Gary Bettman impression is awful.
Thank you.
Secondly, the reality is, as you just touched on, Drew, is the fact that they brought him in just simply to be the lightning rod. I mean,
be the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, he has no problem because the fact is he's doing it at the owner's behest. It's not like the ownership said, "Don't come, Gary Bettman." They simply said, we need you to. It's all. I mean, guys, it's all part of the negotiation. It's such an old model. I mean, people in Winnipeg. I mean, when the Jets were coming back, what did Gary Bettman come in and say? You've got to sell out those tickets,
Dave. I actually want to hear more of Drew's Gary Bettman impression. I actually think it's pretty good.
So I just think like it's just a try and true method that the NHL uses on teams when they want to put pressure on the city. You know, it's like Mario Lemieux going to Kansas City to go check out the arena that they have there because, you know, the Penguins weren't willing to give him a new building in Pittsburgh. The city of Pittsburgh wasn't willing to give him a new building. So
remember,
I think
the Oilers did the same thing when they were fighting to get their arena. Don't you remember Daryl Cates, the billionaire owner of the Edmonton Oilers, used Wayne Gretzky to fly to Seattle to check out what the Seattle possibility might have been.
So, I mean, again, unless, like, you know, Calgary is considering moving back to their original Flames roots of Atlanta, I really just, I'm with you guys. I don't believe that this is actually going to happen. I think it's simply a negotiating tactic. I don't particularly like it. I just think, like, how is it that they can't, like, I don't like the threats. I don't like the ultimatums. I don't like Brian Burke saying, we're not going to threaten them to leave. We're just going to leave.
You know why it sucks? It's because the economy in Calgary has been struggling for a while now.
Well, the oil industry collapsed.
And it's a great city. We've all been there. Dave and I went there in 2004 when the Flames were on that playoff run with Jerome McGinley and Mika Kiprusoff and all those players. And they are a great hockey market, an educated hockey market. I mean, we're talking about an Olympic city in Calgary. The Flames are not going anywhere. They're well supported. They need a new arena. This new arena they're talking about in the Victoria Park area, it's a $500 million plus arena. So you're going to need some support from not only the city government, but the provincial government. And really, this is political posturing here. And it's both sides. It's not just Naheed Denchi, the mayor of Calgary, or Ken King, the CEO of the Calgary Flames. I mean, they're trying to get a little bit more out of each side, right? Yeah. So eventually they'll come to the magic number and this will get done. But as far as, you know, all of this talk about Seattle getting a team or Calgary possibly relocating, I mean, come on.
Well, my favorite part about it is that this is according to, of course, a city insider, this is in the Globe and Mail, is that the Calgary Flames are demanding that the city of Calgary pay for a significant chunk of the new arena, exempt the team from property taxes and rent, all at the same time refusing to open their books as the two sides negotiate. So they ask for the moon. That's what always happens. They fight about it. Eventually, they come to an agreement somewhere in the middle, or somewhere, you know, hopefully for the city, the taxpayers of Calgary, you know, taxpayers of Alberta, something where the owners of the billion-dollar company end up paying for it themselves, something like that, and we all move on.
When you look at the new arenas that have been built north of Calgary and Edmonton, and then obviously in Detroit, the newest arena, you know that a new arena is going to ensure the long-term stability of a franchise, right? So they know that this needs to get done. It's exactly what you said, Drew. If the team right now doesn't want to pay that $185 million or whatever it is, you know it's going to be somewhere around that amount. You know, maybe it comes down a little bit, maybe it goes up a little bit. I don't know. But, I mean, right now, I think you just have a lot of sensitive people on this issue, right? But to suggest that Calgary is going to lose their team, as far as I'm concerned, is ridiculous, and it's an insult to Flames fans.
Absolutely. Shifting away from Calgary quickly, though, Seattle. Sounds like they might get their renovated Key Arena in time for the 2020 NHL season. Anybody have any doubts whatsoever that they're getting an expansion team?
Well, they might. I mean, we're talking about 2020. I mean, ask me in 3 years, right?
Well, like, what are we
talking about here? I mean, yeah, they could get an NHL team, but I would expect it to be an expansion team.
Yes.
Because I mean, I don't think it's going to be a relocation. And when you consider, you know, a lot of people were looking at Carolina, well, they're going to have a new owner there. So it looks like, for now, at least, they're a little bit more stable. But, I mean, really, it could be Quebec. Quebec's had a new arena for 2 years now.
Problem is that the NHL doesn't. The NHL wants to go to Seattle with the Western-Eastern divide and everything else a hell of a lot more than they want to go to Quebec.
And that's the whole point, is that you're going to get a more even distribution of teams if you have a team out in Seattle. Now, the reality is, Quebec is clamoring for a team. They have been as long as, you know, Winnipeg was, and, you know, they see what Winnipeg has done. They've built the arena. They have this phenomenal world-class facility in Quebec City. So, you know, the fact that Quebec City isn't the next market to be talked about for, I mean, and they have someone who has money. They have deep pockets. So, I mean, the Seattle talk over Quebec is shocking.
By the way, if we're talking about 32 teams... I mean, there's going to be bad teams this year.
Yeah,
I mean, Colorado, Vancouver, Vegas, Arizona, there are going to be some bad teams this year. You add another team, the quality of hockey is not going to be good.
No, the quality of hockey is going to be horrendous. I mean, the quality of hockey already isn't great night in, night out for a lot of these teams. The season's too long and there's too many teams.
Well, this is the first year with 31 teams.
Right, but even with 30 teams, there are a lot of you watched a lot of bad hockey last year.
I think a lot of that has to do with the salary cap. You have a lot of teams not being able to keep some of those players, so they're losing some of those veteran players, you know, to Europe and stuff like that. But I'm just saying. I mean, you've already added an expansion team. If you're going to 32 teams,
well, the owners.
I don't know if we need 32 teams.
We don't, but the owners want their $650 million that they don't have to share with the players,
and the players want another 30 jobs in the NHL.
Yeah, to some extent, I think that's
there's
probably
no question
the case.
About
there's,
it.
Nobody's ever against expansion because the
fans are usually
fans are because the quality suffers.
That's what I mean.
There's another, like you said, the NHLPA likes it because there's another 30 jobs. The owners like it because it's another $650 million in their pocket or whatever the price tag is going to be for Seattle. So, I mean, that's why we always get these expansion teams.
True. By the way, I do think we are going to see a 32nd team eventually, but I mean, it's not going to be for 3 or 4 years. So,
I think they announce it if this arena deal gets locked up in Seattle and gets the official approval and gets going. I think they announce it. It wouldn't surprise me if they announced it within the next 12 months. I mean, there's too much money on the table for the NHL to overlook it, and they have ownership that wants to be there. It's not like they're, you know, somebody's building an arena that doesn't want the NHL, which is what was going on.
Well, they want the NBA too.
Well, no, but the original owner, whose name escapes me right now, who was going to do the arena development in Seattle. And it seems like he's lost the battle, really only wanted the NBA, didn't really want the NHL. Now the new ownership, the new arena deal, wants both, and particularly does want the NHL as well.
If the NBA goes back, will they be called the Supersonics?
It depends. I don't know if the Oklahoma City Thunder own that name or not. If that ownership group owns it, I would hope not. I would hope they'd be able to be the Supersonics. But maybe the NHL team can be the Supersonics. Capture that nostalgia factor as well.
David Bonderman.
David, thank you, Dave. You came
a fellow David.
Yes.
You know. You related to Detroit Tigers pitcher Jeremy Bonderman?
How did you remember Jeremy Bonderman?
I had him in a fantasy pool 1 year.
You know nothing about baseball, typically, and then you pulled out Jeremy Bonderman?
I knew a few things, Drew. I used to play baseball for River Heights Community Center. Yeah. I had 7 strikeouts 1 game.
like you struck out seven times while up to bat?
No, I threw seven strikeouts. They were calling me the Sandy Koufax of River Heights. It's a true story.
Kristen Odland of the Calgary Herald joins us next to talk more about the Flames arena situation and the Flames as they enter training camp. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's up next on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Big congratulations out to Lauren Dreger. He's the winner of the Bell Acres Golf and Country Club passes. We'll send those out to you, Lauren. Look for them in the mail this week, and we'll see you at the Bell Acres Golf and Country Club.
Darren Dreger's cousin.
Yeah. Hitting the links later on at Bell Acres.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Kristen Odland. She covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. Kristen, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi. Just at the Flames scrimmage, one of many today, or the Flames ice time, I should say, the training camp ice time, day two. So just watching old friend Tanner Glass try to, your old friend, the
yes.
Winnipeg Jets old friend Tanner Glass, trying to make a case for himself here with the Calgary Flames. So. Busy day.
Former member of the GST line.
Exactly. The G from the GST line. It was Tanner Glass, Jim Slater, and Chris Thorburn back from the first year. They were dubbed the GST line here in Winnipeg.
Nice.
Kristen, obviously the Flames, you know, they're on the ice, so hopefully they'll make more news on the ice with the start of training camp than the off-the-ice drama that we heard earlier in the week with regard to the arena and everything else along those lines. Was this just a sort of a negotiating tactic by the Flames ownership and Ken King, or do you think that are they just really upset with, you know, the how the negotiations have gone? Is this just sort of the public posturing that comes with every arena negotiation?
Well, it's been an ongoing conversation, I should say, with the city since long before 2015, but definitely 2015 was sort of the start of some serious negotiations. Ken King and the Calgary Flames came out with the idea of Calgary Next, which was a kind of a grandiose idea of revitalizing the West Village, which is where the Greyhound Station is on the opposite end of downtown to where the Calgary Flames currently play. Not that it was dismissed by the city, but it was pretty much deemed unviable by the city moving forward in terms of an arena proposal. So the negotiations have been kind of going on for quite some time. The city came back to the Flames with an idea for the Victoria Park area, which is where the Flames currently play now, in an arena proposal there. But basically, Ken King came out on Tuesday and said, this isn't going to work. We're going to pull out of negotiations. We haven't spoken since July 30th, 31st. And this was in response to Mayor Nahed Menchie's mayoral campaign, which outlined an idea for the Victoria Park, for the Victoria Park project. So basically, Ken King came out and said they weren't on the same page with that. Yes, the timing is pretty curious with the election coming up next month. Ken King felt like it was important to let voters know that this is where they're at in terms of negotiations with this current mayoral candidate in the city of Calgary, Mayor Nahed Menchie. So, and it's basically been a back and forth all week. Yesterday was the response to the city's proposal. They released a proposal which indicates that the city would pay for 33%, Flames ownership would pay for 33%, and the users would pay for 33% in a ticket surcharge. So that equates to $555 million. Ken King said yesterday that they have an entirely new concept that they want to release next week. So it isn't ending anytime soon.
Christy, you mentioned Mayor Nenshi. It's my understanding that he's a very popular man in Calgary. He's a two-term mayor, and he could be a third-term mayor, as you mentioned, with the election coming up. Do you read anything into Mayor Nenshi not being a big sports fan? And a second part of that question is, does it really matter how big of a sports fan he is when you consider that it's really going to come to the city council and a vote?
Well, it's tough because, you know, Mayor Nenshi said yesterday he's a big Flames fan. He's a huge Flames supporter, and that's true. I mean, he has, you know, been pretty vocal about his support for the Calgary Flames and wanting to get a new arena. But it's about making money and negotiations, and really, is this plan a fair plan for the Flames in general? Yes, there's the argument that the owners have such deep pockets, well, they should fork out some money, but. It's a city. The entire city benefits now from a new arena and from everything. The profits that go into a new arena, the business that is injected into the city of Calgary by a new arena. It's multifaceted. So there's probably a huge population or a huge percentage that may not see the value of a new arena if they're not arena users here in the city of Calgary, which I find that kind of hard to believe, because, you know, whether it's the Stampede, whether it's the concerts at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome or events going on in the city, I think, you know, most people benefit from the facilities here in Calgary. So it's just about, and taxpayers have a right to, you know, have a say where their money goes. So And somebody asked yesterday in the Ken King scrum, well, is this a political issue? Do you support a specific political candidate running for mayor? And Ken King said, well, no, it became a political issue when Nenshi released his plans that were that indicated that they were on the same page or that seemed like they were on the same page, and they're definitely not.
So, Kristen, I guess the question I have is, it's a two-parter. Number one, where do fans overall stand on this issue? And then also, is this kind of filtered into the players at all? Are the players being asked about this? Are they responding? And is it impacting them at all?
I did a story yesterday talking to some players, just seeing what the reaction was. Obviously, there's so much noise happening around them right now, even at the start of training camp. Like yesterday, in my story, I said, look, like, they split up the 3M line, which was so wildly successful in last year's season with Matthew Tkachuk, Michael Backlund, and Michael Frolik. And they put Neil Poirier up there in Frolik's spot, which was just a temporary move, but should have been big news, and everybody was focused on the arena negotiations. So I asked a couple of the players what they thought, and, you know, Mike Smith had a good perspective because he dealt with it in Arizona with the Glendale Arena for years and years. Basically, it's not their job. They're set to play here in the Saddle Dome this season, and that's all that they can really control. And yeah, they'd probably like to get something done. Yeah, they'd like to have nice new facilities. Comparatively, when you go around the league and other arenas, it's the Saddle Dome, frankly, just isn't cutting it anymore. It's the oldest building in the NHL, if you don't count Madison Square Garden, and you kind of can't count Madison Square Garden, but built in 1983. So players, you know, only can say so much. I think there are some distractions, but you kind of have to just block it out and play and focus on playing.
Kristen, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, go. No, your second part of your question, but I can't remember it. I got on such a roll.
the other part was just about the fans in general. What kind of response you're getting from fans about this situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. It's like, I have Twitter fans or Twitter followers that follow me on Twitter simply for hockey. So they're, you know, they're for, they come to the arena and they follow the Flames and they want a new arena. So there's people that are obviously for the arena. But then again, I hear some people, it's maybe a 60-40 split, so 60 people against the new arena. And just being careful where their tax dollars go, because, of course, it's still tough times here in the city where it's so oil-driven, and there's still a lot of people out of jobs and careful with their money these days. So it's not going to end anytime soon, that's for sure.
Kristen, let's move away from the arena debate and move to the on-ice performance. Sam Bennett, he finally got his contract done. He was an RFA. He signs a 2-year contract. It's going to pay him $1.95 million per season. you know, he's got the pedigree of a fourth overall pick back in 2014. It's never been able to translate onto terrific on-ice performance. Last year, only 26 points in 81 games. What's it going to take for Sam Bennett to break through and sort of become that key component of the Calgary Flames when, you know, that they thought they were getting when he was drafted fourth overall?
It's been a tough road for Sam Bennett, and I see that because I've covered him since his draft year. Just because the first year heading into the season, he was drafted fourth overall in 2014. Heading into that season, he was sidelined with a shoulder injury, so he missed most of the season, most of his first, what was would be his first NHL season, having to get shoulder surgery, having to recover from that. And then he went to rejoined his junior team to kind of get his legs back, and then joined the team, the Flames, in the playoffs at the last game of the season, and then into the playoffs. Their short playoff run, two-round playoff run. So he's a little bit behind. You kind of forget that. You look at his age and his draft class, and you kind of forget that he's a year behind. Now, he had a great second year under Bob Hartley. Last year, a couple of different factors. The team wasn't great to start the season, so nobody really got off to a good start. And he was sort of just still figuring things out. There's been a lot of talk about whether he should be a winger, whether he should be a center. It seems like the Flames really are committing to him at center, and that's a tough position to, especially in the Western Conference, it's a tough position to just, you know, be thrown into. Sean Monahan really struggled for the first couple of seasons. His face-off statistics weren't very great, but obviously he had the point-producing side in his favor. But it's interesting. I had a couple of conversations with Sam Bennett. He's got a beard now, and he's kind of relaxed, and he sort of thinks, I think just getting back to being comfortable and having a swagger will make a huge difference for Sam Bennett coming into this season. And it's a bit of a bridge contract that he signed. So he's such an interesting story this year, and it's going to be neat to see where he goes or you know, if he what he does with that. He's got all the tools. And he's kind of a mean player, and he needs just to kind of embrace that side, and we'll see where it takes him.
Krista, we're a Manitoba-based hockey show, so we obviously got to ask you about Travis Hamonic, the big acquisition for the Calgary Flames. When you consider that the Calgary Flames are already stacked on defense with the likes of Mark Giordano, Dougie Hamilton, TJ Brody, are we talking about a top-five defense now that the Flames have?
It's on paper. It's certainly really attractive, and kind of being trumpeted as one of the best defenses in the league. Hey, last year, coming into this season, we were talking about Brian Elliott and how great he's going to be for the Flames, and that didn't work out. So Travis Hamonic is such an interesting addition, and he's already impressed the media, just his personality and his demeanor. He's such a nice man. So. And really been through a lot and mature. And he is going to be paired with TJ Brody. That's kind of what they had in mind when they traded for him. And obviously playing a little bit closer to home might make him feel a little more comfortable. It's sky's the limit for that pairing. TJ Brody is such a smooth skater, and he's really, I mean, last year was even a tough season for him. But he still had a pretty good season. He's a great skating defenseman, and then adding a guy like Travis Hamonic should, in theory, really complement TJ Brody's offensive-minded defensively. So, yeah, I mean, Travis Hamonic, for me, it really takes this defense to the next level. Obviously, they have to play the games before we can kind of make that assumption, but it's for now, I mean, that top pairing with Mark Giordano and Dougie Hamilton, and then you have Travis Hamonic and TJ Brody on the second pairing, and then you have Michael Stone, another Manitoba boy, as your fifth defenseman. Hey, it's and then that sixth, seventh spot is pretty wide open during camp for somebody to take it and grab it. So it has the potential to be a pretty darn good defense.
Kristen, is there a different feeling this year than there was last year, considering that all the players are signed and reported to camp, and you're not missing players due to the World Cup like you had last year with Gaudreau, Frolik, and Backlund, and obviously Gaudreau missed time with the contract dispute? So is there a different feeling in Flames camp this season than there was last?
It's such a good point that you make that. It's kind of all we've been talking about heading this entire month, really, since the start of training camp and the weeks leading up to it, because, you know, Johnny Gaudreau was with the team. Sean Monahan, he had a bit of a cranky back, so he wasn't able to play in the World Cup. So he was out for the start of the season last year, played in one preseason game. Johnny Gaudreau didn't play in any preseason games and wasn't even around during training camp, obviously with the World Cup, but with his contract negotiations as well. And then all of the other players that you mentioned that kind of are a core group of players, once in a lifetime opportunity to play in the World Cup, but hey, that does make a difference, especially when you have a new coaching staff. Glenn Gullison and his coaching staff were brand new to the start of the season, so that, you know, they were trying to quickly implement their style and their systems. Having everybody here right now and having a second year, Glenn Gullison's into his second year coaching, so having that already in place, having expectations already in place, I think will be such a huge difference. The Flames had such a terrible start last year, like 5-10-1. It was awful. So, and it really got them behind the eight ball. In the NHL, there's so much parity these days. It's such an incremental difference between being pretty good and being one of the best teams in the league. So that start is going to be so crucial for them. And to have Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Michael Backlund, Michael Frolik, and an entire coaching staff already here and in place, I think will make the world of difference for the Flames this year.
The Flames open up their home portion of the schedule against the Winnipeg Jets. That's Saturday, October 7th, about 3 weeks or so from now. Kristen Odland will be there covering the Flames for the Calgary Herald. Kristen, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. We'll do it again real soon. Take care, Kristen. When we come back, we look at the week in signings in the NHL. Number of contracts signed, number of RFAs have come to term. We talk about it next. It's NHL News and Notes. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
David Pastrnak, the Bruins forward, young player sensation, gets his name on a contract this week. Finally, lots of chatter about that contract. Was he going to go to the KHL? Was he asking for Draisaitl money? Turns out it's a six-year, $40 million contract for David Pastrnak. $6.667 million per season as the Bruins get him under contract for the next 6 years. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Ezzy Pastrnak, 6 years, $40 million. What are your thoughts on that contract after what had been a lot of public posturing on both sides? And I don't think it was an unrealistic possibility that he might have gone over to the KHL this season.
I never thought he was going to go to the KHL, and I said that last week. I think I said it even 2 weeks ago. I thought Pastrnak was going to sign before or around training camp started.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back and listen just to know that I'm not making that up. But when you talk about Pastrnak, I mean, we know that he's coming off of a sensational 70-plus point season with the Boston Bruins. And I mean, Pastrnak is a huge part of what the Boston Bruins are trying to do going forward. And, you know, he doesn't get necessarily some of the headlines that some of the other higher draft picks get. He was a 25th overall pick back in 2014. But I guarantee you, if you redrafted that 2014 year, he'd be a top 10 pick, maybe even a top 5 pick. That 2014 draft was certainly not as strong as the 2015 or 2016 draft. So when you're talking about Pastrnak, I mean, they had to get him done. And I think Don Sweeney and Cam Neely did a good job here, because David Pastrnak was obviously seeking more money. He was mm-hmm. looking for in the range of $7 and $7.5 million a year. And what they ended up at, you know, 6 point whatever it was, $1 million a year, I think is fair, very similar to what Mikhail Granlund and Alex Wenberg got, a little bit more, I believe, than what Alex Wenberg got, and maybe even just a little bit more than what Mikhail Granlund got. But when you're talking about Pasternak, again, I mean, this guy, the sky is the limit. I mean, we're talking about a 21-year-old forward here, guys. So I think, I mean, what are we talking about, 80 points, 85 points, right? Mm-hmm. To score 70 points, 32, 34 goals, whatever it was, as a 20-year-old is pretty impressive. And I don't think he got as much headlines. And that has a lot to do with the fact that there were a couple of players named Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine tearing up the league last year. But what Pasternak did in his second full year in the league was very impressive.
Absolutely. And to your point, if you remember in the first hour of the show when we were talking about sort of internal team salary structure, Pasternak actually makes more than Brad Marchand did. Marchand coming off of, you know, signed that contract a couple years ago.
Well, yeah, and again, you could just make the argument that, you know, that's a bargain for the
absolutely.
Boston Bruins. And I don't think Brad Marchand has any problem with that. If anything, you know, David Pasternak, they had to get that deal done. I don't think they wanted it to be a distraction in training camp.
No, but my point was, you know, it's no longer the rule anymore that player X can't make more than player Y. This, you know, X in this case being Pasternak, his contract happened to come up at a time when players are getting, you know, top flight players are making more money than they did when Marchand signed his contract.
No, it's a good point. And hey, Marchand's coming off of an incredible year, scored the game-winning goal at the World Cup of Hockey. But if we're talking about pure offensive talent, Pasternak's a better offensive player than Marchand. Marchand's a better all-around player.
Yeah, Marchand's, you know, 39 goals last year, 37 of the goals the year before. If Marchand,
but he's 7 years older than Pasternak.
I know, but if Marchand was up for contract this year, he'd be making closer to $8 million than Pasternak.
No, I agree. I'm just saying, I mean, you know, you watch, Pasternak kind of reminds me of almost a... He reminds me of like a mixture of Peter Sikora and Patrick Elias. He might be better than that. You watch the Bruins play. I mean, this guy is as dynamic offensively as any other player in the league. It reminds you even a little bit of like a Nikolai Ehlers or William Nylander. You watch Pasternak play. I mean, this guy can create something out of nothing. So I'm just saying, I'm not saying that he's a better all-around player than Brad Marchand. I'm just saying that offensively, he's the best player the Bruins have, I think.
Yeah. Local boy, we head to New Jersey to talk about a local boy there. That's Damon Severson, the defenseman. He signs a 6-year contract extension with the Devils. It's $25 million in terms of total money. That's a $4.166 million per season. As you're the resident Devils expert, you like Severson's game. A lot of people around the league like Severson's game.
Yeah, we talked to Ken Danico a couple weeks ago about Damon Severson, and he really is the Devils' top defenseman now. And, you know, he's coming off of a really good year, and he has a lot of room to grow. And this is another guy. He's not a top 10 draft pick either. He's a guy that the Devils really got a little bit later in the draft. And when you're talking about Severson, you know, he plays maybe a little bit more of a quiet game, but he's a very solid defenseman. And I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that scores 50 or 60 points in the league, but you're certainly looking at a 35 or 40 point defenseman. He's still in his early 20s. So, you know, that's a good signing, good term. And when you're talking about the Devils, again, I mean, they don't have enough depth in their organization that they could afford to not re-sign him to a long-term contract, right? So you're talking about a bunch of plug-and-play players for the Devils when you're talking about you know, who they've brought in there. Ben Lovejoy, I thought, did a decent job last year for the Devils, but it's still a young group, and I still think that you're going to have, you know, opportunities for some other players to make the team. You know, Will Butcher is a guy, Drew, that they signed. Mm-hmm. Hobie Baker, finalist. He's a guy that's going to get an opportunity to make the team. Steven Santini is another guy that's going to be given an opportunity to make the Devils next year. So there's still work to go there. You know, John Moore, Andy Green, of course, the captain, they've done a decent job there, but I think there's still one or two defensemen away here. But Damon Severson, I really like his game, and it's nice to see him get rewarded with a long-term deal.
Yeah, and some guy named Nico Hischier might certainly help things in New Jersey, of course. Dave, in Colorado, it turns out Matt Duchene did report for the start of training camp. He spoke briefly to the media when he did, and this is a guy who certainly isn't happy to be there. You could clearly see that in his comments. He said, "I'm just here out, you know, to fulfill the terms of my contract, you know, out of respect to the fans and respect to my teammates." That's a guy who didn't look like he wants to be at training camp in Denver, and you wonder just how much longer can this saga drag on. It's a cloud over the entire organization at this point.
Yeah, it's just become a poisonous relationship, and it's amazing to think that, you know, when he was drafted by the Colorado Avalanche, the fist pump he gave, you know, because of his idolization of Joe Sakic and how excited he was to be joining the Colorado Avalanche. So I don't know that anybody would have envisioned all these years later that, you know, the relationship would have become as acrimonious as it is. And you can see it on his face. You know, when he took his group shot, I mean, he was just miserable. And again, there was a lot of speculation he wouldn't show up. He showed up. Again, not expected to talk too much to the media because he just doesn't want to be addressing the questions that he knows that they're going to be asking him, which is, does he want to play for Colorado? I don't know what leverage the Avalanche have really anymore, because everybody knows his asset, which is a good asset, has diminished, because like they have to trade him because the relationship is so bad. So really, I mean, if you're Joe Sakic, you had... I don't know what deal you... I know the deal that there was talk of, right? He wanted the two first-rounders. He wanted a player. But the fact is, what are you going to get now? I mean, you're getting a player in Duchesne who wants to be anywhere but in Colorado. Can he have success? I mean, he has pride. He's a professional athlete. So you know he's going to go out there. He's not going to be half-assed. He's going to give his full effort on the ice. But I'm just saying that from my perspective, I think Joe Sakic has severely weakened his position in terms of what he can trade that asset for.
Well, at this point in time, Joe Sakic should just send an email to all 31 other NHL teams and say, look, I'm trading Matt Duchesne by 9 a.m. on Monday. Make your best offer between now and 9 a.m., and I'm going to pick whichever one I want.
Well, he won't send it to 31, because then he'd be sending it to himself as well.
Pardon me. You're right. Let's head to break. When we come back, Joe Haggerty of CSN New England is going to join us. We'll talk about the Bruins. We'll talk about the Pasternak signing. Talk about the Bruins as they begin training camp as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning here. You're listening to TSN 1290. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Man on my left, Ezra Ginsberg. Man on my far left, Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can send us your text messages to 129090. We get those here in studio. Standard messaging rates do apply. You can send us what you like, what you don't like, 129090. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news, audio, everything you want to know about the Jets as they begin training camp. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Boston and welcome back to the program our very good friend Joe Haggerty. Joe covers the Boston Bruins, CSNNewEngland.com. Joe, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, boys. Good to be back. How is everybody?
It's great to talk hockey on a Saturday morning, isn't it, Joe?
Absolutely. We have a hockey show here in Boston. We start doing once the season starts from 9 to 11, so it always feels right for me to be talking hockey on a Saturday morning.
Absolutely, Joe. We always appreciate your time. Bruins get the contract done with David Pastrnak. You know, obviously he gets the 6 years. It's the $40 million. The price tag, the length, is that, you know, kosher with you after what turned out to be a fair bit of consternation from both sides?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's fair for everybody. You know, the fact that the market played out the way it did, and you had some elite young players, elite young restricted free agents that really hit it big this offseason, whether it was Evgeny Kuznetsov, whether it was Connor McDavid, and, you know, the direct comparable to Pastrnak, Leon Draisaitl getting $8.5 million a year, and, you know, other comparables to Pastrnak, like Vladimir Tarasenko, when he signed his deal, he'd only had one 30-goal, 70-point season like Pastrnak, and he got, you know, 8 years and $60 million. So, you know, I think all things considered, it could have been a lot more expensive to sign him. I think it was a good market deal, maybe even a little bit below market value for him. I had him pegged at around $7 million a year. The Bruins get under that. And they get him locked up for 6 years. And on his side, he becomes a free agent now at 27 years old. And as long as he performs the way he's expected to and the way he did last year or better, he's going to get a monster deal at 27 when he comes out of this contract. So I think it worked for both sides. I think everybody really should be happy with it. And certainly Pastrnak was. He said he went out after signing his deal, and he bought himself an $8 sushi dinner in Cambridge yesterday. So clearly money is going to change him in a big way now that he's got the big bucks coming from the Bruins.
I hope we're not going to be asking you in a couple weeks' time about David Pastrnak and his food poisoning.
Well, we have pretty good seafood and sushi here in Cambridge, so I think he's safe. If he ever found his way in Cleveland and ordered sushi, he might be in trouble.
Joe, do you think the possibility of David Pastrnak going to the Continental Hockey League was ever real, or did you think this contract was going to get done the whole time?
Yeah, I thought it was going to get done. That was a ploy and a tactic that, you know, agents will use, and particularly with restricted free agents that don't have arbitration rights and there's not a lot of leverage there. They're going to try to use whatever tools or whatever methods they have to gain a little leverage. And, you know, Pastrnak was very consistent saying he wanted to play for the Bruins. He loved it in Boston. The Bruins were consistent saying they wanted to keep him and that they were going to find a deal that worked. And they had kept $10 million in cap space to make the signing. So they were prepared for offer sheets. They were prepared for anything, knowing that they were going to keep their player. So, when that stuff got tossed out, I was on TV and I said, there's a 0.0% chance that he goes to the KHL. Because I knew he wanted to come back here, and I knew eventually, once it came down to it, and once training camp rolled around, and you know he was going to start missing actual real time with the team, that it was going to get done pretty quickly after that. I think there was no appetite on Pastrnak's part or his agent JP Barry's part for him to miss a long chunk of time in training camp and potentially negatively impact his season and the Bruins' season. So. You know, once they got close to the Johnny Gaudreau number, which I think was the direct comparable to the contract that Pastrnak signed, and it was just slightly below that, I think that's probably as far as the Bruins were going to go without Pastrnak really holding out, missing a long part of camp, and really playing hardball. They probably could have pushed it to $7 million if they wanted to go that route, but I think Pastrnak didn't want to do that, and credit to him, he takes more than enough money for himself and his family. And like I said, sets himself up for a huge payday at 27, provided he you know, goes 35, 70, 40, 80, whatever, for the next 6 years, like his abilities kind of dictate that he should be able to do if he stays healthy.
Joe, with the Pastrnak deal in place, is it time for Bruins fans to put their faith in GM Don Sweeney?
Yeah, and I wrote that yesterday. And you know, there were some stumbling blocks for him early when he was a rookie GM, and you know, trading a third-round pick for Zach Rinaldo, trading Dougie Hamilton for fear of him signing an offer sheet rather than kind of letting things play out, failing in that draft to trade up and get a defenseman. He wanted Noah Hanifin, and he made some trades to make that happen, getting the three first-round picks in the middle of the first round in 2015, but was unable to parlay that into trading up in the draft to get Zach Werenski or Noah Hanifin. So, you know, there have been things like that. At this point in hindsight, it certainly looks like he overpaid for Matt Beleski and probably for David Backes as well in free agency. And there's definitely been a learning curve for him, but he's also had some good moves that he's made. And I think you've seen in the last couple of years the signing of Brad Marchand to a deal, which I think is going to be an absolute steal for him in the best years of his career. And now signing Pastrnak for slightly under market. You now have your two best offensive players, if you're the Bruins, signed long-term at both under $7 million a season. I think that is great work by Don Sweeney, and I think it's time to, you know, accept and acknowledge that he's no longer a young GM learning, and he's kind of, you know, feeling his groove a little bit here, and he's put the Bruins in an extremely good position to have a nice little run with the young players in the core group that they have.
Joe Haggerty, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe covers the Boston Bruins for CSN New England. You can read his work at csnne.com. And, of course, follow him on Twitter at Hacks with Hags, a great Twitter Twitter account if there ever was one. Joe, you mentioned Brad Marchand in the previous answer. He came out earlier in the week and said it doesn't matter to him if Pastrnak ends up making more money than Marchand had signed for, or you know, a couple of years ago. How much did that help in sort of getting both sides to come to an agreement?
Yeah, I think it helped. It certainly didn't hurt. I think there was some concern that because Marchand took a hometown discount for sure and took less than he probably could have made as a free agent if he'd let things play out, that there would be some hard feelings on some level if all of a sudden Pastrnak comes in as a 21-year-old right off his entry level and starts making more money than Marchand is going to make. And, you know, Marchand is an NHLPA guy. He's a union guy. He's a smart guy. And he understands that when the second deals for these young players start to go up like this, that it causes everything to go up. And this is why the owners try to avoid it, because it's kind of an inflationary thing. But for the players, that means, you know, all boats rise and, you know, everybody starts getting paid more money. And he knows it's a good thing to the entire Players Association. So he's not going to complain about that. It's certainly not going to be an issue for him in the dressing room. I don't think that's important to him as far as, you know, judging what somebody else is making. I think he's a team guy and that doesn't get in the way. But I will say it's interesting and it's instructive that I don't think the Bruins wanted to go any higher than $6.75 million, which was the Johnny Gaudreau number, because that number also falls under how much that Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci make first season on their contracts. And I think the Bruins would have had a serious issue paying more money to David Pastrnak in his second deal than they pay out to Patrice Bergeron, who's, you know, within a couple of years probably going to be the future captain of this team. So, you know, it doesn't really matter as far as Marchand is concerned. I think he said as much, but I think it matters to the Bruins to keep their internal salary structure in place and to not pay Pastrnak more than some of their established cup-winning veterans.
Joe, I know the Bruins organization and Bruins fans are really excited about Charlie McAvoy. We saw him debut last year in the playoffs for the Bruins. He got into six games. What are the expectations for Charlie McAvoy from the Bruins organization this year? Because I know a lot of people are already pegging Charlie McAvoy as a potential Calder Trophy candidate this year.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a legit Calder Trophy candidate. And you know, I think the expectation is he's going to have a season similar to Zach Werenski, and he's that kind of a player. You know, he's a big, strong kid that can play in all situations. He's very adept offensively. He pretty much does everything you want him to do well. Can play a ton of minutes. He's really a workhorse. So I think the expectation for the Bruins, certainly from a lot of people that have seen him play, is that he's going to be the best rookie defenseman in the NHL this year. He's going to get put in a position to play that way, too, and to prove it. You know, he's going to be a top-four guy, I think, right off the bat. He's going to be he's paired in training camp with Kevin Miller, who's playing his offside on the left side, and I think they're going to give that a run and see how it goes, and that may be the pairing that you see to start the season. So that will be a pair, and then you'll also see, I think, Brandon Carlo and Zdeno Chara as a shutdown pair. So he's going to get fed minutes. He's going to get fed all kinds of different situations, both penalty kill and power play. He's going to have a very strong veteran stay-at-home presence on his other side. So he's going to be put in a position to succeed, move pucks, create offense, and you know, play the all-around game that we saw for six games in the playoffs, where he's playing 26 minutes a night and looked far beyond his 19 years of age as far as how developed his game was. Obviously, there's going to be some patience. There's going to be a rookie in the NHL for the first full season. The ups and downs that go along with that, trying to be a defenseman in this league that young is awfully difficult. But I think he's got the tools to succeed at it and to you know, minimize the slumps or the ebbs in his game and really be a consistent force all year. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, but I think as long as he remains healthy, he's got the goods to be among the best rookies in the league. And there's a reason when they drafted him, they mentioned the name Drew Doughty a lot. It's a lofty comparison, but I think he's got a very similar game, and people will see it this season.
Joe, Zdeno Chara is set to become a UFA next season. Do you think he'll be back in a Bruins uniform after next year?
Yeah, I do, and the Bruins have mentioned they want to sign him. He wants to stay in Boston. There's mutual interest there, and I think what you're going to see here is the Bruins are going to do what they should do, which is see what Zdeno Chara looks like as a 40-year-old in the NHL, make sure that he's the same player this year as he was last year when he had a fantastic year, partnered with Brandon Carlo, you know, try to lower his minutes a little bit, take him completely off the power play, just have him be a shutdown guy that plays penalty kill and you know, plays about 20 minutes a night, shutting down the other team's best offensive players, and you know, see where that goes. And as long as he performs this year like he did last year, I think they're going to have no problem signing him probably to a one-year deal. But at 40 years old, I think they're going to do the smart thing, and they're going to wait a little bit before they do it, and they're also probably going to go 1 year at a time with him moving forward for $3 or $4 million a year until he's not able to do it anymore. And knowing Chara, such a workout freak, he's 6'9", and he led the team with 25 pull-ups in the training tests a couple of days ago. He may be another Jagr, and he may play until he's 45 years old and be effective doing it, because he's that dedicated, I think, and that proud and loves the game that much to want to keep playing.
Joe, a couple more, and then we'll let you go. First one is an old friend of ours here from Winnipeg, Paul Postma. He signed a one-year contract with the Bruins in free agency. Is he sort of penciled in as the seventh defenseman for the Bruins, or is there a possibility that he gets that somebody's going to beat him out in training camp for one of the spots in the Bruins' defense?
Yeah, I think certainly he, at the outset, he looks like he's going to be the seventh defenseman based on his experience level and having played in the league, and I think he can play both sides. And, you know, there's a lot about to like about him, and I think he would bring a lot of value in that role. That being said, there's a lot of really good young defensemen that the Bruins have. You know, they're figuring that Carlo and McAvoy are going to make the team and be in the top four. And, you know, aside from that, they've got Torey Krug, Zdeno Chara, Kevin Miller, and Adam McQuaid. So, you know, they've got at least the starting six to this point, the top six locked in. But there's Jakub Borla, a former first-round pick. This is his first training camp. Jeremy Lauzon, a former second-round pick, who was very good when I was watching him just now in the first session in the D-zone. You've got players like that down in Providence that could come on fast. And Matt Chris, like Rob O'Gara, guys that are second-year pro now. I think the advantage that Postma has is that he's older. He's probably used to playing that seventh defenseman role and staying sharp. And I think the Bruins want to go with a veteran in that kind of a role rather than just put a young kid there. So I would expect all the young guys are probably going to start the year in Providence, get some experience, and that Postma's going to play that seventh D-man role with the Bruins. But, you know, things can change. If a young defenseman all of a sudden shows that he's ready to go and he's ready to play right now, as Brandon Carlo did last year, that may rearrange Boston's plans a little bit on the fly.
Joe, we'll let you go on this last one. You know, Bruins last year, a playoff team, but I don't think anybody really thought of them as much more than a first round. Maybe they win a round, get into the second round playoff team. You know, have expectations internally in the organization changed given that, you know, Pasternak, another year older, sort of, you know, the younger players maybe have some more experience under their belt? Is this a team that can be built for a longer playoff run, basically?
Yeah, I think they're probably a year or two away from thinking they're legit Stanley Cup contenders again. You've got to see more development out of McAvoy and Carlo. And, you know, they've got guys like Jake DeBrusk and Anders Bjork, young forwards that are expected to step up and win jobs here in camp. And, you know, they could have a lot of rookies and second-year players in their lineup to add to that and complement the veteran core that they have. And the holdover cup winners, they still have a handful of those guys from 2011. So they've got an interesting mix of veterans and young players, and there's still a lot of talent on this roster. They've got two of the best players in the world, and Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron, and one of the up-and-coming ones, and David Pastrnak. So I think the expectation is they're going to get back in the playoffs this year. Maybe a nice step would be to win a round, maybe two rounds, go on a little bit of a run. And I think that's kind of the goal. It's going to be difficult because I think the Atlantic Division is going to be a lot better this year than it was last year. You know, Tampa Bay didn't make the playoffs last year. I don't expect them to miss with Stamkos back. Florida Panthers missed the playoffs. They've got a really good young team. I think every team in that division has gotten better, and the Bruins are going to be hard-pressed just to get back in the postseason. But if they do, I think the expectation is they're going to win a round or two, make that next step, and then maybe 2 years from now, you start talking about them in a legit contender status again.
Joe Haggerty covers the Boston Bruins for CSN New England. You can follow him on Twitter at Hacks with Hags and read his work at CSNNE.com. Joe, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, boys. Take care.
Take care, Joe. One final segment when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Wanted to give a shout-out to the Winnipeg Goldeyes. They're in action tonight at Shaw Park. It's now down to a best of three for the American Association Championship. They split in Wichita. The Goldeyes look to bring home the championship by winning two out of the next three at home at Shaw Park. Game times tonight, tomorrow night, and Monday. Of course, tonight, I guess, is a little up in the air with regard to the weather. bundle up if you're going to be out there. We'll see if that game ends up occurring. But best of luck to the Goldeyes.
It's definitely hockey weather outside right now.
There's definitely, you want to go hit the outdoor rinks? It's not quite that cold just yet, but there's definitely a chill in the air today, especially. But then again, you look at the forecast, and it's supposed to be nice again later on in the week.
Back up to 23.
So yeah,
we don't have to get our parkas out just yet.
Not yet? Okay, then I'll stop scraping the ice off my windshield.
Summer's over, boys.
Well, you know,
it officially ends in 6 days.
Yeah, there you go. It's not fall until, you know, I mean, it's not fall when the Starbucks decides to unveil the pumpkin spice latte or whatever.
No, it's out.
I know it's out. That's what I'm saying. Is like people are like, it's fall, and it's like, no, it's September 3rd. It's just, you know, Starbucks is marketing their whatever drink.
If you're basing your
I don't drink Starbucks, Drew. I drink Tim Hortons.
I know, you're a blue collar sort of guy.
Yeah, I'm like a blue collar guy. I don't drink $7 coffees.
You don't drink any of that fancy hoity toity stuff like that. Those Starbucks coffees or anything. You know, I hear. I appreciate you there, Ez. That's good stuff.
I don't think it's very good coffee, but anyways.
That's, I mean, also a fair argument. It depends on how strong you like your coffee. For a lot of people, it is too strong, that kind of coffee.
Like Starbucks coffee is like drinking detergent.
Really? It's a bold
Have you drank
statement.
Detergent before to compare?
Do you know? Have you been guzzling detergent in your spare time?
I mean, it would explain a few things, Ez, so I mean, explain to us.
Great on this Saturday morning to actually be able to talk about, you know, talk about some hockey that you can sort of feel it. You can taste it, that it's real close. Exhibition season somehow starts Monday.
Drew, you know it's hockey season when your Twitter timeline is full of Jets fans getting upset about the line combinations.
Oh, imagine if they actually ran any power play time today and if Line A wasn't on the first power play time.
I see fans on my timeline are going nuts over the fact that, you know, Brandon Tanev is on the fourth line. Like, guys, it's day two of training camp.
Yeah, and it doesn't actually mean anything right now. Like, these lines are, you know... Yeah. Hang on. So you're saying that right now the pairing of Dustin Byfuglien and Logan Stanley, you don't think that's gonna manifest itself in the regular season?
Let's just relax.
Yeah, but, you know, as much as we want people to relax and everything else, it is still fun that they...
No, I love it.
I mean, they get worked up.
No, I mean, don't relax. I mean, do whatever you want. It's just, I find it funny.
Part of fandom, right? You're a fanatic, so, I mean, you get excited and you're focused on this stuff. It's, you know, it's not a bad thing for us.
No, it certainly helps with us. It certainly draws the listeners in when they get obsessed about the Winnipeg Jets and everything else. Readers, too, for the website, illegalcurve.com, where all the latest news, audio, everything is available there, certainly, as we get set to really get, you know, knee-deep into the hockey season. You know, starting really Monday, the first exhibition game. I mean, that always sort of sneaks up on you. Because training camp begins really today, yesterday, whatever. And then they don't waste any time before that first exhibition game because they got to, you got to jam in all those exhibition games and get all those, you know, hard-earned dollars from people to watch, you know, average AHL quality hockey for, you know, at full ticket prices.
Well, it's interesting because I agree with you, Drew. Like, I wasn't anticipating the exhibition games to kind of hit right away. I was thinking, oh, there'd be at least another week of training camp, and then we would go, of course, to a game or two. But, of course, then we were talking about it, we're like, Ezzy and I were like, well, there's a game already on Monday.
Yeah.
Minnesota Wild. So, I mean, we've got to be in full form.
It's amazing how quickly it comes upon you. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to all our guests, Michael Trakos. We had Kristen Ovland of the Calgary Herald. You heard Joe Haggerty. In case you missed them or any of the other guests, the show's available for download on iTunes. It's available to download, of course, through your Apple and or Android device as well. It's also available on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Support them because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big shout out to producer Sean, doing a great job behind the board. You'll hear him with us this year on NHL This Week. For Dave Manouk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.